I'm your host, Brian Stavely, and as usual today, I'm joined with my co-host, Justin Cook. Justin, how are you doing out there, buddy?
All right, be doing tonight.
Doing pretty good, man. I'm doing pretty good myself. It's been a couple weeks. We got a few things we want to go through with everybody tonight. And at 11 o'clock, guys, we're going to bring in a special guest. Dom DiMaggio is going to join us at 11 o'clock, so he'll be calling in then. For right now, I mean, let's get right into it. What do you want? What's on the play for you tonight, Justin? What's on your mind?
Well, I think to the standard stuff, but I think, you know, right now I think we should start off with some Iran, you know, and of course we have the saber rattling going on by all sides of the mainstream media, you know, and it's pretty much just like, you know, it's almost a. Like in the,
lost you.
In my opinion, totally fixed. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we heard you. We lost you for about 3 or 4 seconds. You got Skyped, kid. You got Skyped.
All right. So I just want to say, yeah, so if you couldn't hear me, I was saying, you know, pretty much it's been, you know, a big story among all of the mainstream media. And, of course, you know, Obama wants to do it to get his approval rating up. And, of course, the Republicans over there, they're arguing over who wants to bomb it first type thing. And Israel's supposedly mad at the U.S. because, you know, the U.S. hasn't bombed them yet. And it's like, you know, it's really coming down to the nitty gritty here. And, you know, the anti-war movement in America is nowhere near it was when the Iraq war happened.
Where are all these people that were condemning Bush? I mean, where are they now?
They're in hiding because it's their buddy Obama.
It's unbelievable, man. When are people going to just put aside all that left-right and go with what's right and what's wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what's sad is that they actually... you know, these are the same exact lies we heard on the build-up to Iraq. Same exact thing. Weapons of mass destruction. This time it's nukes, okay? Nukes is like the magic word to get everybody, you know, scared out of their shorts. And rightfully so. Of course, you know, nuclear weapons are, you know, they're the probably the biggest thing besides... I think a bioweapon is probably could take out more people. But, you know, as an instant thing, you know, a nuke is number one.
Oh, absolutely.
But I really think it's baseless. I think that from what we've heard, Iran is not looking to build a nuclear bomb. They're looking for nuclear power. You know, and the main thing is that they're at least a few years away from being able to get enough plutonium to make a bomb.
Well, here's the thing, Justin. I mean, who the hell are we to tell them what they can and can't do with their nuclear, with anything? I mean, seriously.
That's the bottom line. Yeah.
Who nuked a population of over 100,000 people? It wasn't Iran. You know what I mean? That was us. So how are we the nuclear police, first of all? Now, second of all, you got Iran. Look where they are. They're surrounded by, well, at least what we're told is this hotbed of terrorism. Now, I don't, you know, God only knows how much of that is even true. But, you know, they're surrounded by all this violence or whatever. And all these other countries have nukes. And you have Israel, who is an enemy with them. And they have nukes, but Iran, we expect Iran not to have them? I mean, it's kind of you don't even really have to scratch too far past the surface to see the hypocrisy in it, do you?
No, you don't. It's right there in your face. And you know, and here's another thing, too. You know, like you said, Israel has them, Pakistan has them, India has them. You know, and Israel got them illegally. Israel, for one, you know, they used a lot of stolen technology from us. They also gave it on to China. You know, and I'm not just on a bash Israel fest, but here's the country, the main country here that's rattling their saber, and yet they're sitting there, you know, trying to order the rest of the world around and NATO around of when to strike Iran. If you don't do it soon enough, we're going to do it type thing.
Oh, and they couldn't get us to, you know, put a bunch of troops over there fast enough to launch an attack.
Yeah, no, it's disgusting. They're totally surrounded right now. As far as that goes, you know, they have a puppet government over in Iraq. Mm-hmm. They have a puppet government over in Afghanistan. Syria, actually, you know what the only place worse with propaganda than Iran right now is Syria. Listen to the mainstream media earlier, and they want you to believe that, you know, that this guy is like perpetrating a Holocaust over there. And
Justin,
whether it's right or wrong, who are the United States to step into the sovereign country's business? You know, and just like in Libya, same situation. They told us this guy was a bad guy, which, you know, you can't take the mainstream media's word for anything nowadays. You know, how do we know that they're telling the truth? And secondly, who are we to judge? You know, who are we to step in it when we're $16 trillion in debt? You know, never mind how bad the living conditions are getting in America. The fact that over a quarter of the world's prisoners are locked up in American jails. Come on, this is hypocrisy, folks.
Oh, it's an absolute hypocrisy. You want to hear more hypocrisy, okay? Now, we've talked about Iran, you know, at great length on a lot of episodes of my show and on your shows and other shows that we've done elsewhere. And we'll get back into it tonight about the CIA coup that happened in 1953 when we actually, you know, overthrew their elected president, basically, you know, a democratically elected president. We overthrew him for the interest of the United Kingdom and their petrol oil and petroleum companies because they wanted to lock up, you know, a lot of the what do you call them, refineries or whatever that were inside Iran. Now, not only that, you know, guys, listen to this, okay? People want to call Iran terrorists, all right? Now, not only does Iran, and this comes from an interview that, you know, their president did when they asked him about, you know, what his opinion is on how the West perceives him as a terrorist. And, you know, he said a lot of good things. And one of the things he said was, you know, you don't see Iranian forces in all these other countries. You don't see, you know, Iran invade in this place and that place. Name me one country where there's Iranian forces. And he said, you can't name me one because that country doesn't exist. Okay. Right. So they're just really minding their own business. Now, I don't know the exact date, and Justin can probably help me out with this when I start to tell the story, but not that long ago, you know, when I say not that long ago, I'm talking in terms of, you know, probably within the last 20 years, you know, we actually shot down a civilian airliner with almost 300 people on it and killed them in Iranian airspace, okay, with our Navy. We shot a missile, and to this day, we refuse to apologize for it. George Bush actually... he was very smug about it and says he absolutely will not apologize for it. And they said they mistook it for I think they said a fighter jet or whatever. But so, dude, we were in their airspace, you know. And if they did that to us, guys, if they even sneeze at us, we call them terrorists. Okay, we shot down their airliner with 300 people in it. If they did that to us, you would never hear the end of it. And this is after we overthrew their government, you know, many years later, 40 years later, 30 years later, whatever. Oops, we did it again. I'm sorry. And you know, now we're really getting our nose in their business, Justin. And now we're telling other countries, you know, not to get oil from them. And we're trying to persuade India into getting oil from other people. And you know who's on the top of that list? Saudi Arabia. Now, let me ask you this. You want to talk about propaganda? How are we so close with Saudi Arabia if 18 of those people were supposedly hijackers from Saudi Arabia on 9/11? Okay? Why haven't we invaded Saudi Arabia? Why do our presidents kiss their leaders on the lips? Because it's all bullshit, man. Yep. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, the Kingdom of Saud, when it comes down to it, is another one-world government faction. They are not real Muslims. They do not... you know, they do not care about the other countries over there. And of course, there's a few other ones, United Arab Emirates, Dubai, Kuwait. But Saudi Arabia is the main one of these people that are just monarchs. And you know, their people are treated fairly well. But, you know, they treat the Chinese help and the Palestinian help like garbage. You know, so I mean, it's really, you know, like you said, and just recently them trying to pin 9/11 on Iran was laughable.
Oh, laughable. Oh, that assassination attempt. You know, like Iran is stupid enough to go to a Mexican drug cartel that they know is infested with feds from the United States because it was already just a big scandal, Fast and Furious, a few months before. Like, they would really go to that cartel and ask them to make a hit out on a diplomat on U.S. soil. I mean, come on. I mean, it's laughable. The storyline is, like, it's worse than, like, a cheap crime investigation show on one of the not one of the big ones though. Like, you know, you see one on these crazy, like the Ion Network, and it's like almost like it's made for teens. It's like it's just a horrible story writing. I mean, nobody's gonna believe this stuff, but you know, some people do, and it's just because people are so lazy and they don't want to wake up and they don't want to look at anything, and it's just it gets really frustrating. But you know, I wanted to mention something real quick is you know, like I've said before, I'm always trying to get in contact with real people, you know, real people in some of these countries. And I had changed my profile picture to the Iranian flag just to basically draw some attention just for a day and make my point and, you know, to tell that we stand with those people and you know, those people aren't any different than us. And, you know, I want people to question me on it so I can say what I need to say and some of the things that we're saying now. Well, there was a woman that saw it and she asked me, hey, what's with the flag? And I sent her a message back, and I said, whoa, didn't you see the big, long paragraph I put with it? But she didn't, because she must have seen where I just had changed my picture to it and where I didn't make any writing with it. So I ended up going back and forth with her with a few messages, and then we ended up Skyping, and she's in Iran right now. This woman's from Iran. She lives in Iran. And she gave me an interesting view on what their – because one of the first things I asked her is, you know, what is – your media telling you about what the U.S. is going to do to you, like what's going to happen, are we going to invade? And you know what she said? She said they're treating it like a big joke, like it's an absolute joke, like they're not serious about it. And I was kind of taken back, but that wasn't the response I was expecting. I was expecting one thing or another. I wasn't expecting they're portraying it as a joke. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, and I think the main thing over there is a lot of these people are bewildered. They don't understand why they're being, you know, why they're about to be attacked. And, you know, yes, no. They're, you know, let's be real, you know, 100% real. Yes, Iran is not one of the best, you know, at human rights. But again, who are we to judge? Look at American
Mind
human
our
rights.
Own
look,
business,
look what
dude.
They're doing
That's
to Bradley. Look what they're doing to Bradley Manning right now. And not only that, but look at where every one of you that has an iPad, an iPod, you know, something like that, you know, any made from Apple, and among many other, you know, any other country that's pretty much gone here and taken our jobs away. You know, these people are at sweatshops working 36-hour shifts, jumping off of buildings. They had to put nets up outside one of the Apple factories, you know. And it's just really, you know, who are we to judge, you know, who is Bill O'Reilly, who is Rachel Maddow, who are any of these people to judge? And that's the sad thing about it. And you know, the people that really get caught up in this stuff a lot of times is the older people that think the news is telling them the truth.
It is. If they're the hardest ones to convince, like to change their ways, I mean, it's so hard. But I mean, there's hard-headed people everywhere. But
there is.
You know, I don't understand how people just brush off this war and all these other wars and the ones we've been in and the ones that are coming up as if they don't even happen. I mean, it doesn't even faze them that we're murdering millions of. I don't know if they understand. We're not just murdering millions of troops, which is awful enough. We're murdering millions of civilians, guys. You get that? Civilians. Just picture, you know, I live near Boston, okay? Guys,
it's
a million and
kids.
A half. Picture they came into Boston and just blew the thing up and everybody was dead. No big deal, right? Collateral damage.
Yep.
And then when you start fighting back, they call you the terrorist. It's unbelievable, man. It boggles my mind, dude. It really does. Terrorist is a word given out by the winners of the battle, basically, the people that are going to be the winners, the people that are going to demonize the other people. That's basically what it is. You know, before they attack somebody, they frame them as terrorists. I mean, it happens over and over and over again. And the terrorists are really the people in the business suits, the people that are running places like AIG, Bank of America, you know, all these, you know, people that put all the money behind these crooked politicians. I mean, it's pretty frustrating. It really is. It boggles my mind that you know, more people don't take interest in it when you're trying to tell them, you know?
Yeah.
I still have some friends I can't even talk to. I feel like I'm just disconnected from them now.
Yeah, I was trying to tell a friend of mine the other night about this stuff, and he just is totally doesn't want to hear, you know, type of person. And this, he's just ignorant. You know, he's one of the ones, oh, we should, you know, turn, you know, I don't care if we turn it into glass or a park, you know, parking lot, whatever the hell. You know, it sounded like it was Bill O'Reilly on steroids, talking.
Yeah,
and
you wanted to slap him in the face.
I really did. You know, it's like, dude, these are people just like you. These are kids just like we have. Just like your nieces and nephews. You know, these. Look how many kids, for example, died by Pakistani drone drone attacks in Pakistan, and
they're suing the CIA now. Some of the families.
And we're not even at war with Pakistan, right? You know,
no.
That's the funny thing about it. You know, funny
in
a
weird
way.
We do whatever we want, dude. And there's no decency. Like, there's no – when you, I mean, it's – I don't know how – if I'm saying this wrong, but I don't want to say this wrong. And human life should be valued. And when you kill somebody with a gun, okay, that's a hard thing to do, to make that decision to end their life. Now, these people are sitting in, like, Arizona with a joystick, and they're taking lives away with these drones. I just feel like there's something inhumane about that. Do you know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, of course. It's because what you have is you have a bunch of kids that grew up in the video game age. They're sitting over in Arizona or New Mexico or Colorado.
Ghost Recon or SOCOM or something.
Right, and that's all it is to them. You know, to them, I'm sure that, you know, they maybe you know, they do think about it, but it's not like having to look someone in the eyes and actually pull a trigger and watch their, you know, brains get splattered.
Like,
all you're seeing is boom, a big hit, and then, you know, maybe afterwards they might show. But, you know, it's just an outrage, and I think that you know, it's one of the things that our generation, the generation before me, you know, was totally programmed for, and the next one is being programmed for even more as we get into more of the, you know, whether you want to call, you know, more of the advanced weaponry and you know, transhuman agenda and everything else, and the fact that they're going to be, you know, phasing us out for robots eventually, and you know, and as the weapons get worse and worse.
You know, I used to never buy into the whole, you know, video games are bad for you type thing. But now that I'm awake and I'm kind of looking at things, and, you know, I like video games. I haven't played in like a year because I've been researching and I don't have time for that stuff anymore. But I used to like to play a lot. And, you know, I didn't really notice because I wasn't awake yet. And, you know, if you look back at some of the games, I mean, some of the war games, I mean, that's really predictive programming. It's really brainwashing. It's propaganda. They really, really do glorify us bombing the crap out of these places. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And people are, you know, they get all fired. You think some of these kids, you know, say you're a teenager and you're playing Call of Duty all night till 6 in the morning and you're blowing up Iraqis or whatever it is, and you're all online yelling with your buddies, hooting and hollering. You think those people are still going to value their lives over there in real life as much as they should? Probably not. When they hear about the things on the news, it's like they've become desensitized to it. You know what I'm saying, Justin?
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
they hear about the real deaths on the news, it's like they see that in the game every night.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, and like you said, and we all take that tongue in cheek remark of, you know, violent video games are violent, and you know it's making kids. Well, you know what, I don't expect to see as much of the, you know, of the sadistic weird crimes that, you know, like, you know, mass murders. But what I do expect to see, I mean, that's more of the MK Ultra thing anyway. I kind of think, but what you are seeing is a generation of kids that are all able to go and become a drone operator and go and do this stuff and kill innocent people. And like I said before, you know, you're
did you
see
the commercials?
10,000 miles
look
away.
Like a video game. They make the commercial look like a video game now.
They
One of
do.
The Air Force commercials. They have
they
it looking like they're playing a new Call of Duty game or something, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's really the Air Force, and you're really controlling these things. That's how they market the commercial, I swear to God.
Mm.
And, you know, it's disturbing, guys. You know, I just don't understand how people don't, you know, just can't – some people are so thick-headed, and they just can't see. Guys, never mind the war on terror. War is terror, okay? You guys have probably seen the little bumper sticker going around on Facebook or whatever. War is terror. Think about it. How do you stop violence with violence? Does it even make any sense?
You know, that's like having sex for virginity.
Two rights don't make a wrong, you know, guys. And we're talking about taking human life. I mean, that's the ultimate wrong, isn't it? Isn't that the ultimate wrong, taking somebody's life? And yep. You think taking somebody's life before they take yours is how you prevent it and you're peaceful? Get the F out of here, man.
In every major religion, in every, you know, even if you're not religious, you're, you know, karmic law and, you know, and just even in human decency. That is the one worst thing is taking a human life. And I think that the fact that people have such low regard for human life of people in other countries over here and just kind of, you know, people are already on that Aleister Crowley, do what thou wilt, will be the, you know, the fullest extent of the law or whatever the exact quote is. But pretty much what the quote is saying is pretty much just like you can go around and do what you want. And you're above the law, you know, and then these are the same type of people that want to see, you know, everybody, drug tested just because they're, you know, they're, for example, like, you know, we were talking about this the other day in the Real News Online group. And that was the whole thing where people want to, drug test. I think it was in there, might've been in another group, but, want to drug test the people that are getting state aid. Yep. Welfare, food stamps, whatever. Now, here's one thing about it. I mean, you know, that's totally wrong. And I think that in general, just because, you know, here we go again, back to the two wrongs don't right make a right. Just because, you know, people are getting jobs and having to take urines, which is, that's wrong in the first place. That's one of the things that we should be fighting. You know, that's a major thing right there. We should, you know, they shouldn't have all the information they have on us. You know, and then the fact that the state wants to drug test, you know, anyone getting state aid. You know, first off, you know how much money that would cost? And secondly, you know, the people that are going to pay for it is the guy that, you know, possibly went out and smoked a little marijuana, which we all know is not bad for you. You know, if anything, cannabis, cures cancer, not smoking it, but it doesn't cause cancer. You know, it's not bad for you at all, besides the fact that you might eat a bag of Cheetos. You know, but again, it's just, it's this whole nanny state thing. And the thing, well, it's class warfare to where they want to pit poor people against other poor people.
Oh, absolutely. They want to cause division within the economic classes. Absolutely, man.
That's the main thing. So that's what they do. They get the people that are working white, you know, or working whatever. I don't mean working white, but, you know, the people that have, like, low-paying jobs are mad at the other people that don't have jobs. And right now there isn't enough jobs to go around. They say the national unemployment rate is around 9%.
Bull crap. Almost triple that.
Real figures have it around 23 to 27%.
See, exactly. Almost triple that, man. Come on, you can come on, man. Any city you live in, and I know all cities don't match the national average, obviously. But come on, man. Could you even imagine being in a city where 9 out of 10 people you know have a job? No way. Not right now.
Nope.
I don't see it happening, dude.
Not at all. And here's another thing too: is the fact of people taking jobs that are paying way less because they have no other choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this all comes down to the same agenda, and it's been you know, here, I want to bring up something real quick, and this goes back. I want to talk about class warfare.
We got all night. You don't have to be quick.
And this is in the United States, you know, a little bit of history on it. Back in the days of slavery, you know, back in the 1800s, you had Irish people coming over as indentured servants. Now they were allowed to come over, and they were given, you know, 7 years to work, and then they would be free, 7 or 10 or however many years it was, and they would even, you know, get a small parcel of land afterwards, and, you know, they wouldn't get much, but, you know, they had to work off you know, their trip over here, and a lot of times, you know, had to work off the fact they were poor, that they were given to someone as an indentured servant. However, then we had the black slaves. So what they did was, when the Irish indentured servants became free, they would turn them into slave catchers. So what does that do? That now turns these two people against each other that at that point were trying to join up together, you know, in alliance. They're trying to get together and have meetings between, you know, some of the free blacks and some of the representatives of the Irish to get rid of this. And this is the same people that were behind that, are behind all this stuff today. And we haven't learned from history. And I think it's just totally disgusting. But that's the main thing. You know, you have an indentured servant that is pretty much a slave, but eventually he gets his freedom. And how do they reward him? But by making him feel that he's above this other person, so now he's going to automatically hate, you know, this the slaves or whatever after, you know, that's his new job. So I mean, it's just total hypocrisy.
It's sad, man. It's really sad. You know, people are so easily manipulated, and they don't even understand that it's going on. I mean, they have no idea that it's even going on, you know? Do you have anything else you want to I kind of wanted to mention something before I forgot. Do you have anything else on this before I
On this, no, not much more. I think that we, for the most part, you know, reached our point. I mean, you know, on just how morally wrong this is. You know, and here again, guys, I think that we, you know, we need to all take a little something from the non-aggression principle. You know, the non-aggression principle is really just to you know, not harm anybody, especially that doesn't harm you. You know, and that's a way that. You know, we're so programmed, you know, here in America that it's non-existent, but that's what, you know, to be a free person, that's how you need to live. And, you know, we're not free because, you know, if we were free, we wouldn't be looking to take other people's rights away.
No, it's such an easy concept too, man. I mean, really, don't murder people. I mean, come on. And if, like we were saying, with the movies that are out, and we really didn't say the movies this time, but, you know, with the movies and the video games and the TV shows and everything, I mean, they've really desensitized us all to violence, okay? I mean, you've probably seen, you know, 300,000 murders in your life on TV, you know what I mean? Now, yeah, if you see a murder, it's going to be shocking, but it's going to be a little less shocking than it would have been, okay? And I don't know, I just feel that people turn on the TV, okay, yeah, another 1,000 people died over there, another 19 people died in a bomb blast, and they don't even care about it enough to look at the story. Like, they just go on to the next thing. Okay, whatever. What's on Jersey Shore right tonight, you know? What's on Wheel of Fortune? Right. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it's totally sad, and we're at the point to where you know, Americans just don't care, and that's where we're at.
That's discouraging, you know, and that's why I think we do what we do. We try and get people to care, you know. And, you know, guys, when you're out there and you see people, you know, basically warmongering, you know, on the internet or whatever, like if you go to certain newspapers, let's say, you're in their comment section. And I know Justin mentioned this before when we were talking about the Tim Thomas incident with some of these crossover issues. But even on things like this, these big issues like the war, and you see these people in there just basically – you know, the same nonsense you hear coming out of the GOP debate, you know, with all these people just all, you know, talking about how we're going to invade Iran, how we're going to annihilate it. When you see people talking like that, that's when you know the real deal. That's when you got to step up, guys. You got to step up. Like Justin said a few shows ago, register on these sites, drop a comment in there, and set some of these people straight. And just bring out some of the basic things like, you know, what if they came here and murdered your family? Like, go to the extreme with these people because they don't get it. You know, they don't get it. And I had to tell a family member this the other night. He's so hot-headed, and he's like, I don't give a F about people in other countries after I was talking about how 1.5 million people died over there. And I try and tell him, okay, well, what if they, you know, soldiers came in your house, you know, or somebody put a smart bomb through your window, blew up your house, blew up your kid's school, and then wouldn't apologize for it. And then when they had tanks on your street and you started fighting back against it, you were called a terrorist by the rest of the world. You know what I mean? Like, I feel if you know about these things and you don't bring it out, that's being a coward, man. I mean, that really is. You need to tell people what you feel. People, why are people so afraid of what people think of them, guys? Express yourself, man. We're not all supposed to be the same, okay? You're supposed to be different. Let people know what your opinion is on these things. You don't know. Joe down the street might have the same opinion. Why are you keeping it in? You know, if you're keeping it in, you're only playing into their hands more. They want you to keep it in. That's like kind of the reason of some of these things. They promote a little more fear, I think, to keep you in fear, to not oppose the government. Because you think the government's going to lock you away, or they're going to do this, or they're going to do that, because they don't want you to express yourself. You guys, you got to talk about these things and let people know, hey, this is wrong. Get people thinking about it. And, you know, a lot of the times people are really hard-headed, but maybe you'll get through to some of these people that you didn't think. Maybe they'll think about it and be like, wait a minute. What are we doing murdering people to prevent murder? I mean, it's that simple, isn't it? I mean, we're murdering people to prevent murder. And because we use bigger bombs than they do, we're not terrorists? I mean, what's the logic there again?
Yeah, the logic is that the victors write the history, and that's a sad point. And I think that, you know, like you said, it's straight up bullying when you come down to it. We're not... You know, and actually, I will say it's like, you know, we're the Americans, United States is like the police of the world, because the same way that the police act in America as bullies. And I think that, you know, that's how we act on the world stage. And think of how many, you know, I'm not a big, I really don't believe that any of the terrorist attacks we've been told were real or done by any of the people that they've said they are. But just think of this as the blowback factor, you know, and I don't think that it's really possible for any of these groups to really get at us with the, you know, with the intelligence and whatnot out there. And I think the fact that there's so much control over these groups by the powers that be. But in general, you know, think of why so many people don't like Americans. Why, when we go abroad, do people tell you that, to tell people you're from Canada? Because it's, you know, people worldwide get it a little bit more than Americans do. And that's this false pride that we all, you know, that we don't have. We've shed that by now. But, you know, your average American does. And they feel, okay, if there's a war going on, I'm going to get behind it. I don't want to say anything bad about the president or bad about the so-called government, you know, it's just it's disgusting. Another thing real quick on this, you know, we'll get back into this in a minute, but
yeah, whatever, let's go.
We had the two NATO personnel killed in Afghanistan, and supposedly I haven't looked into it too much. But I believe the guy claimed, you know, pretended to be a part of the Afghan forces or whatever, and got it, you know. But to make a long story short, I smell a setup already. I think that they pulled this at the exact same time to get more support for these wars against Islamic states.
It's another SEAL Team 6 job.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know,
go ahead.
Yeah, I really wonder how that happens. How does a guy just end up being able to pull all this stuff off? And, you know, it makes you wonder. I'd even want to look into it and see if these victims are even real, to tell you the truth. You know, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but it just sounds like something that didn't happen. Or, hey, maybe they were, you know, if it did happen, maybe they were, you know, people that had spoken out or something like that. And that's another thing that we have to look at. And, you know, like I said before, too, look at how they are treating Bradley Manning. And what did he do? He is in trouble right now for exposing a war crime. The reason why he's in trouble is because that war crime was supposedly it was supposedly classified. Well, you know what? War crimes are not...
Of course it is. Is that all you got to do? Slap a classified on it? Okay, you can't talk about it. Now you're the criminal? I mean, come on. This campaign against whistleblowers in this country is getting ridiculous.
It is Stalin-esque. You know, it is Stalin-esque. It is just, you know, no different than how Hitler treated the people that went against him.
Yeah, I think we need to bring it up more. Different. I think we don't talk about it enough, and we need to bring attention, especially to maybe some individual people that maybe have been scooped up. I mean, I'm not really too up on the knowledge of this, but I think maybe that's something I need to start looking into, because somebody's got to, you know, help these people out and at least get the word out there that they're being held and what they're being held for, and see what their information is, and it's obviously something good. I mean, maybe, you know, that's something we could start to look into, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, and here's the thing about Bradley Manning. I have mixed things on him because, again, you know, the WikiLeaks thing, in my opinion, was a big setup and a psyop as well. And I don't believe that he was able to get as many cables as they claim he snuck out of there.
No, that's impossible, dude. How would he get all that? From one computer, all that information is accessible?
Yeah, as the rank that he had, which I think was private first class or something like that.
Yeah.
Totally nobody, you know, like a guy that's, you know, it's like the second rank that you get, you know. So I mean, it's like saying, you know, that I don't even know what to compare it to tell you the truth. But you know, again, and you know, that's what they do.
We have a caller, Justin. I'm gonna add the caller to the call. Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No,
hello, thanks for calling. You're live on Real News Radio with Brian Stavely and Justin Cook. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. Hi, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Doing good, enjoying the show. Listen, I was listening to what you guys have been talking about with regard to the view of Americans around the world. And, well, from my perspective, I can tell you, I'm not American. I'm Mexican. I lived in your country for several years. I don't live there now, but... It's very interesting when you meet Americans outside the United States, because you can get many kinds, but you usually get one of two. You know, the traveling backpack American that goes where he goes, he behaves, he adapts to the culture, he learns the customs, he gets, you know, to know the people, and he understands the view that many people have of Americans around the world. And then you get, you know, the obnoxious loud American who thinks that the entire world is there to cater to him and speak his language and basically do his every whim. So I'm just making the comment because it's really interesting that I mean it's refreshing that you guys and have that perspective, have that awareness, and more and more Americans are having that awareness of how they are perceived around the world and why they are perceived that way. And a lot of times, because we're human, you know, we project it to the people. It's not that we hate Americans, per se. It's obviously the actions of your government and your country, and a lot of that attitude is projected by Americans, but it's not necessarily the attitude of everybody. And I just wanted to say that, and much props to you guys because you're addressing the issue, and it's really a very important issue because as a nation, you don't often do a lot of looking in the mirror and reflecting and analyzing why you are the lone superpower in the world, what, you know, how you got there, how the nation was truly built, and the cost that it had for the rest of the world. So I just wanted to put that out there to you guys.
Well, thank you. I appreciate, you know, we really like to hear the view from somebody on the outside looking in. And I do feel, though, I mean, what's your opinion on, you know, how there's the half and half and a lot of them are the people that think America is just, you know, I mean, the world is just their stomping ground, basically. I mean, do you think it's 50-50 or you think it's 75-25? I think it's more like 75-25. I think so many people just they have this perception that for some reason, you know, we're better than everybody else. And I don't understand that at all. It's pretty frustrating as an American. It's kind of embarrassing.
That we think we're above ourselves. And like you said, there, you know, here's an example. The caller just said about how Americans go places. They don't learn the language a lot of times and expect to be, you know, talked to in English and everything else. Well, you know, foreigners don't have the same expectations. Foreigners, for the most part, know more than one language, you know, and they know the at least some of the language of the country they're going to, you know, and I think that it's part of just the ignorance and the fact that we just feel like, hey, you know, we're in America, we speak English, and that's the bottom line, and if you don't like it, you know, go back to where you came, you know. And it's just more ignorance. But
exactly. And a lot of that, I think, is bred from the nationalist mythology that you guys have in the terms of, you know, the Monroe Doctrine and Manifest Destiny and, you know, we are God's chosen people. You know, and the whole mythology of the Founding Fathers. And, I mean, that's really deeply ingrained. And what that creates after, you know, after 200 years, what that creates is a real sense of, you know, nationalist self-entitlement and exceptionalism, and a lot of people do project that. I don't think it's 75%. I don't even think it's 50% that are, you know, really hardcore blind about that. I think it's closer to 25%, and I think 25% are aware, self-aware, and I think there's a big fat middle in the 50% that are kind of aware, but are complicitly still playing along with the game because it's just a lot easier to live your life that way than to deal, you know, with the harsh reality of things. Amen. You know, but they're not hardcore. They're just complicit, you know, silently complicit, I guess you could say.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of people out there that don't know how to speak up and don't want to speak up for the sake of being, you know, labeled someone that is, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Someone that is soft on, you know, these policies and someone that, you know, anti-American. Hey, that's what they call you in America if you actually are anti-war. And hey, look at how many activists have been, you know, tracked down, hounded by the IRS, hounded by Department of Homeland Security for being simply against the wars.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
Oh, exactly. Oh, I was living in the U.S. when 9/11, and I made a few comments about blowback. You know, let's stop and think about why these things happen. Why are we viewed this way around the world? And just, you know, putting it out there very mildly. And I got a whole bunch of comments like, if you don't like it, go back to Mexico.
That's the most ignorant statement, man. If you don't like it, then get the hell out. Okay, so we're just supposed to go along with whatever the politicians say, we go along with, screw the people, but somehow you're the one that's for the people and we're anti-American. I mean, it's absolutely ass backwards, dude. It is. And they try and spin when you're anti-war that you're anti-troops. No, you couldn't be more supportive of the troops by trying not to send them to war, okay? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Keep them home. Keep them safe. That's supporting the troops. Putting them in the line of fire over some bullshit is garbage, man.
Exactly. Excuse and not me. Only that, after they come back all maimed and injured and traumatized, you saw that Walter Reedaw scandal they had a few years back. The conditions that they're in, you know, and it's the same people who are all pro-war that are cutting the funding for the Veterans Administration and all their benefits, you know, and they don't care about them once they come back.
And let me tell you something real quick. I know a few veterans that came back from the war. One of my buddies, in fact, has done 5 tours. He did 2 in Iraq, 3 in Afghanistan. And now he's you know, a drug addict, you know, and now, I mean, he's recovering and everything else. But, you know, from what he's seen and what he's been through, and I don't think, you know, a lot of them are prepared for it. And just the main fact of, you know, you're not too many people are prepared to go and see death and take lives and everything and then come back like everything's fine. And of course, we have the big macho type thing in the military to where, you know, you're supposed to just shut up and take it type thing. And what they do is these troops come back and they're giving nothing but these big pharma, you know, depression meds, anxiety meds. And in the end, they make it worse. We have actually lost more people to suicide than we have lost to enemy combat in these wars. So if
that's
that tells you anything. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I read that somewhere, too. And it's a very telling and sad fact, actually. And
it's
we don't address
sad.
That. We don't address
no,
that.
We don't
just
address.
Put them in front of the cameras, wave the flag, and say support the troops.
Nobody cares,
know?
Man. Nobody cares. Yeah. You know, it's guys, supporting the war, again, I'll say it again, is not supporting the troops. Think about it. Think about if, and I try and tell people this, you know, what if it was your father, okay, and your father, you know, God bless his soul, went to the war, and, you know, say the Vietnam War, for instance, he went to the Vietnam War, and he ended up coming back missing a leg, or he ended up dead, and he couldn't provide for his family, okay, and then you find out the war was started over a lie, and we didn't need to be over there. Are you anti-American for expressing the disdain against that and being upset about that and wanting to tell people that's anti-American? I would think being anti-American is lying to everybody to start a war, putting your troops in danger. You know what? I'm going to go a step further, and I'm going to call it treasonous. What do you think about that, caller? I think it's treasonous.
Oh, I think absolutely treasonous, because you're putting your own personal interests and the interests of the corporations that you're serving ahead of, you know, your own damn people who you're supposed to be serving.
And they'll radiate our own troops with depleted uranium weapons, and God knows what other tests they run on them. You've all heard the horror stories about people getting supposedly vaccinated when they're in the military, but really they're just being guinea pigs and getting tests run on them for whatever they want to do. You know what I mean? I could go on and on about it, but it's just I can't stand the people that pound their chest and think that they are, you know, hoorah, gung-ho American, and you know, you guys are more anti-American than anything, because you guys, you know, to go along with the evil and not speak up is almost as bad as the evil itself.
Well, but you know what? A lot of them don't truly know. I mean, they honestly, wholeheartedly believe that their government is incapable of doing evil things, and that it really has their best interest in at heart, and that they live in a democracy, and that, you know, their congressman is represent. I mean, they really do believe that hook, line, and sinker. They bought it their whole life, and they have no reason to change that, because they've led a very comfortable life believing that.
Yep.
You know, so it becomes a matter of national psychology. You know, how do you really awaken the people to that to that reality?
You know, that's a big problem, too. And like I was saying when we first started the show, it's like, you know, in 2003, there was huge anti-war rallies all across the country. I know L.A. had a huge one. There was, you know, other big ones in D.C. and in New York and everything else. Nowadays, the anti-war rallies are, you know, are so much smaller. And it has a test to the fact that they put in a so-called Democrat that was going to end the wars, and this guy came in, and it doesn't matter who the president is. We know they're all puppets, but, you know, it's just the fact that so many people are fooled by this and think, well, hey, you know, he wouldn't go and just start a war, and, you know, and you have these propaganda guys like Bill Maher and, you know, and Rachel Maddow. They're no different than the so-called right. That is out there, you know, saying the same stuff, you know, and really has no regard for human life either.
Oh, no, absolutely. And the fundamental things are not going to change. Like you said, regardless. I mean, if it's a Democrat or a Republican, it really doesn't matter. The fundamental philosophy, it's not going to change, because that's, you know, after World War II, a certain policy was put in place. You know, and it's going to be followed, and just get the new guy, hand him the rule book, and that's it, basically.
Right.
Yeah, the whole two-party system is all about the illusion of choice. You know what I mean? And it's all to give you something to buy into, to give you, you know, to make you think that you actually are making the decision here. And in fact, these people, they're all selected. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. I mean, come on. The whole thing's a sham. It's been a sham for I don't know how long. Well before my time, you know what I mean?
And I think we're going to see it crumble in our lifetimes, actually.
I hope it does in a good way, though, not in a chaotic way, you know?
Well, here's the other thing about that, though. But I think it may crumble. What I'm worried about, though, is it crumbling, but it's staying the same. In other words, they go and pretend that, you know, that Democrats or Republicans, they may even break up one of the parties. But, you know, the whole thing is, no matter what happens, the same people are still behind it. So until we get these people out of it, you know, the same people that are, you know, parts of these same secret societies that we keep hearing over and over again, these big corporation owners, these multi-billionaire so-called philanthropists that really just go and work on eugenics.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, Carl, we're going to move on, okay, buddy? Thank you for calling in. We have another call, though.
All right.
Thank you very much, man.
I had a great time chatting with you guys. Great
show.
Yes,
please call in next week.
Will do.
Hello. You're live on Real News Radio.
How you doing, man? Stan.
I'm doing pretty good. Sorry we couldn't get to you the first time. We had a caller on already, and we didn't really have the
That's
whole...
That's cool, brother.
Yeah, but, cool. How are you?
Listening to you guys right now. I finally get to listen to it when I'm home. Like, you know, I hear you guys talking about, you know, who you are vote for and all that. Like, who... There's nobody out there that makes any sense.
No,
there's nobody out there that makes any sense right now. And, like, it's, I want to vote just so I have a voice, but it's like, who the hell are you going to vote for?
Yeah,
ain't shit out there right now.
No, there's really not. They're all already bought and paid for. They all, you know, they all have their agendas, and there's really, you know, you can't take one of them that's been in the system for a while and expect them
I just heard what you guys are saying about the two-party system. It's absolutely correct with, like, you know, like they kind of make you vote for one or the other because no one else is going to win.
Yeah.
And it's not right.
It's a lesser evil, and that's all you're doing. You know, just like when Bush and Kerry ran, it was like, you know, I don't want to vote for Bush, but I'm going to vote for his skull and bones.
Right, yeah. You're going to vote against somebody you hate. That's the thing.
Right. You know, it's such a false, you know, psychology that's put on us, and so many Americans still, you know, want to exercise their right to vote. And the fact is, even if the Diebold, you know, machines weren't there, you know, the fact that Electoral College and all these other things still take away, you know, the chance of your vote actually making a difference. I see no reason to vote.
Well, you know what? I mean, because honest to God, what I was always told is you can't bitch unless you put your voice out there. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't, you know, you don't make your voice heard, even though it's not going to make a difference, then you really can't, you know, bitch about anything.
Well, my opinion is this. I don't vote, you know, right now, especially because there's no one I feel that's worthy of my vote. And my reason is this. I feel by not voting, I'm not consenting to these wars. I'm not consenting to these.
Right. Nobody really consents to that. You know, it's an unfortunate thing.
No, some people do. I would say most people aren't aware, but some people absolutely do consent to the wars. I mean, I have some people.
Yeah, well, they're not looking into the real issues.
No, that's the thing. They're not looking into it, but, you know, on the surface of it, I mean, they don't. Some of them really don't give a damn if we.
You know, I mean, it's all rah rah rah, go America, but it's like, you know, you're not even making any sense, to be honest with you.
No, they're not. They're not making any sense, and neither are any of these politicians you see on TV talking about
exactly.
Annihilating
Iran. Exactly. You know,
and
these.
And that.
I did. Man, the debates kill me. It's like watching paint dry. They're all standing there, and all they're doing is yelling about what the other person's talking about. It's like, come on, man.
Give me
something new.
You know what's funny too is most of the issues they talk about are just issues to pull people's heartstrings too, and they're issues that people
right
that don't even
all they're trying to do is to get
right.
you, they're trying to pull you in.
Yep,
exactly.
It is just
that's all they're trying
to
do.
System, and it is they just want you, you know, because if you know that you are living basically in a dictatorship and you don't have this choice, people are going to revolt. They're not going to stand for that. But everything's an illusion. Isn't everything backwards of what we were brought up to think it was?
Exactly.
Everything. Even all these agencies, right? Like the FDA. I mean, they're not there to keep you healthy. They're there to get you sick.
No, they're there to make money.
Cancer, to get you on medicine, to get you with Big Pharma. It's like a big revolving door with all these things. The, you know,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, man. I mean, that's so crazy.
I'm finally glad I'm home. I get to listen to you guys. I'm enjoying it, man.
Where are you listening from? Can I ask you?
Lowell, Massachusetts, man.
Oh, all right. Awesome. I probably know you. That's where I'm from. Okay, cool.
I know you.
I'm glad to have you listening.
We play ball together, brother. I'll talk to you later. Keep doing your thing, man.
All right, dude. Thanks a lot for calling in. We'll probably be having a show next week.
It was a pleasure for me to actually call in. I finally got a chance to.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
It's my pleasure. You guys are doing a good thing.
All right, man. And we have another caller lined up, so we're going to go
all right.
To them.
Well, you know, you talk to him, brother.
All right, thank you.
Thank
Justin,
you.
Get another one. Hey, you're live on the air, Real News Radio with Justin Cook and Brian Stavely.
What's up, gentlemen? It's Dominic. How y'all doing tonight?
Dom, how you doing, man? Sorry we took a few to get you on. We had the calls coming in like crazy.
Oh, that's fine. That's good.
Hey, Dom, how you been, buddy?
I'm doing excellent.
It's a perfect time for you to come in, actually, you know, seeing that, you know, somebody just called to actually talk about the elections and the GOP debate and how you can't really trust any of these politicians. And I know you had some stuff you wanted to talk about today having to do with specifically more to do with Ron Paul than with some of the other ones. And why don't you just tell us what's on your mind and just go for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The GOP, I always call it the GOP idol. It's like American Idol. It gives somebody, you know, it gives people, the peasants at home, something to watch on TV and feel like, you know, they're really a part of something. But it's all a big sham. It's all a big corporation, and it's all fraud. Ron Paul, I think the Ron Paul revolution is perhaps the most dangerous thing to our cause, to what, you know, you want to call it the truth movement or a revolution
right.
or however you want to define it, because the masses are being walked right into part of the New World Order plan by Ron Paul and, you know, this guy down in Jonestown.
Right.
What they're doing is they're promoting a gold standard. And a lot of people listen to this stuff and they're like, wow, the gold standard is good. We need to be on the gold standard. But what they don't realize is that gold, the price of gold is fixed twice a day by the Rothschilds family. And anybody can go look that up and verify it. And the Rothschilds are the same people who are controlling the Federal Reserve and the IMF and the, you know, the World Bank and the Bank of England. They're the head of the pyramid, as far as I can see. So you have there's a board of directors from PNAC, and this is like this is the part that a lot of people in this revolution don't want to hear, or they get angry when you discuss it. But his name is Lewis Learman. And in 1972, they started the Learman Institute. And one of the first documents that the Learman Institute came out with was, you know, the case. It was, let me get the exact name. Let me pull it up. Money and the Coming World Order. And it's pretty much announcing how there's going to be a one world financial system. Now, this document came out in 1976. Lewis Learman, the guy from PNAC, he also co-authored a book in the early 90s with Ron Paul.
Right.
Called The Case for Gold. And we all know that Ron Paul and his biggest pusher in this movement, Alex Jones, are both, you know, big gold peddlers. They've been pushing gold as being like our saving grace out of all of our troubles for so long. Lewis Learman went on Fox News with Judge Napolitano back in August of last year, and he came out and said, we're going to be on the gold standard within 5 years. Now, this is a PNAC board of directors. This guy was there for rebuilding America's defenses, which a lot of people are way more familiar with, which, you know, outlined the war on terror and the new Pearl Harbor, 9/11, so on and so forth. But what I see is I see a lot of people in this movement who believe they've been awakened to it, but they're actually being led. They've actually – it's almost like they've traded shepherds. It's like my shepherd used to be the mainstream media, used to be Glenn Beck, or used to be, pick one of the talking heads off of CNN or whatever.
John hitting the nail right on the head, man.
Hitting
the nail right on the head, Dom.
Yeah, and what they did was they took their shepherd and they traded it for this shepherd over here named Alex Jones, or one of these controlled leaders of this fake alternative media, and they said, well, now I'm awake. Now I can see. Now I see clear. But they don't realize that all they did was trade Shepherd A for Shepherd B. And Shepherd B is leading them right along the same plan.
Exactly. I want to jump in real quick and say, yeah, the whole thing is that I believe this so-called, you know, truth movement, so-called liberty movement, patriot movement, whatever you want to call it. This thing has been, you know, there's been people fighting this, the same stuff that we're fighting for the past, you know, 70 years or so, going back to, you know, Ezra Pound, going back to Eustace Mullins, who actually wrote a book called Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Eustace Mullins, however, stated in the book that gold was not an option, not something to go to. However, a guy named G. Edward Griffin, as a lot of you know, is another one that pals around with Alex Jones and Ron Paul, these other types. He wrote a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. I'm sure a lot of you guys are aware of this. However, that book went and glorified gold and pretended that the Rothschilds are scared of it. And that is totally not the case. And, you know, as Dom said, you know, we have Learman, a guy from Project for New American Century, you know, stating that they're going to go to it in less than 5 years. We have the guy from the World Bank stating it. And then on the other hand, you know, we have this false leader, this guy, Ron Paul, going in and pushing the same thing. And we also played the quote before on the radio before about his whole stance and going back, going to a global economy.
Yeah, guys, there's nothing to fear from global currency, globalism and a one world currency. No, that's exactly the opposite of what all his followers would preach.
That's the thing that we've been fighting against the whole time, I thought.
Guys,
was
they get out there
currency.
And you get these people screaming, end the Fed, and they don't even know what the hell it means, what they're going to replace it with. They don't know the first damn thing about it. And like Dom said, you know, you don't think the gold is going to be manipulated even worse? I mean, come on.
It's the same. That's what I try to explain to people is when they're chanting, end the Fed, and they're like, let's go gold. I'm saying you're taking the monetary system, you're taking control out of the hands of the Rothschilds by ending the Fed, and you're putting it into the hands of the Rothschilds by going to the gold. It's like replacing Bush with Obama and thinking you were going to get something different because you liked the things he said.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, so and what they've done is suck you in with the other things that are popular with – like personal liberty and this and that, which are important issues. But if we're so saddled by currency, that you know we can't even make a dollar and there's no jobs out there. What does it matter? You're enslaved by that dollar bill now. So I mean, you know, that's or by gold, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And you know, they've come out and pretty much have everyone believe in, you know, gold is this great thing. It's intrinsic value. Well, you know, the main thing is, as long as it can be used to deflate or inflate the market, as long as it can be used for usury and all this other stuff, you know, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, and that's why we need to go away from these systems. You know, Keynes doesn't have the answer. Keynesian economics doesn't. Mises doesn't, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. And Marx doesn't. The thing is, we need to go to something, you know, that is for the people. And you know, until we do that, we're just going to keep getting bent over, you know, bent over the bucket here.
Yeah, absolutely. Until we can come up with something to fill our own need to work together and find out, you know, an agreeable system that doesn't put it in the hands of small groups or small, you know, circles of families who can inflate or deflate or manipulate it. It's just going to be trading, you know, owner A for owner B, and owner B is actually still owner A.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And like I said, the price is fixed, and anybody can verify that twice a day at 10:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. The Rothschilds, they sit down with the world's main bullion houses, the Deutsche Bank, and so on, and they determine what the price is going to be. So it's like whether or not the Fed prints more money and makes their money more worthless, or the Rothschilds tomorrow wake up and say, hey, you know what? Gold isn't worth $1,300 or whatever it is an ounce. It's actually only worth, I'm going to pay $200 for it. Then guess what happens to everybody? And a lot of these people who think they own gold,
exactly.
They don't. They just own a piece of paper saying they own gold. If the shit hits the fan, they don't have anything. And what are they going to do if you do have it? You're not going to eat your gold.
That's what I try to say. What if they just, you know, they try and tell everybody how good gold is, everybody buys into the gold, and then they just drop the price out on you, and then your gold's worth shit, you know?
Yeah, you have nothing.
Right.
Exactly.
And another thing, too, is the people that have gold now – let's get into something real quick. Ron Paul, Alex Jones, and all these other guys, they are gold bugs. That's what they do.
Yeah.
All of their assets,
millions in investments,
it's all tied up in gold. The producer for Alex Jones' show is the head of Midas Gold. You know, you can go look at Ron Paul's stock portfolio, and that's where it's all tied up in. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I think that, you know, to be honest, just like everything else, there is no coincidences. He obviously knows what's going on, and he's going to be there, whether it's as the president or the vice president. He's going to be there, and he's going to lead these people in that are just sitting there regurgitating, you know, the same statements over and over again about, you know, and the Fed and fiat currency and socialism. This, they don't understand that what they're doing is they're actually, you know, like Dom said, they're walking right into the cage.
That's why these people are so dangerous, Justin. That's why people like Alex Jones are dangerous, because people, you know, they give you enough truth where you haven't heard people talk about some of these issues before. But when it comes to the key issues, they leave it cloudy. They leave you going in circles, and then, you know, they intentionally mislead you. And it gets to the point where you've already listened to them for so long, and you have trust in them, where some people can't see through that fog, and some people can't make their own decisions, and they need somebody to tell them what's right and what's wrong. And then if Alex Jones tells you, hey, don't watch this because that theory is garbage, or don't look at this, don't look at that, a lot of these people don't. They don't. They just blindly follow. And this whole Ron Paul thing, you know, what else he does is the same trick that Obama did. He buys you another 4 years. I mean, it's the same old trick they've been doing forever. And he actually buys you another 4 years with the people within the so-called truth movement or liberty movement. And all these people, you know, and I don't know if you've heard us before, Dom, and we've said this, you know, you have all these people that for the last 10 years or whatever would cuss out the Republican Party, talk about Bush this, Bush that, and now they're about to go down and register to vote for the next Republican, and one who does has never even spoken out on their behalf. I think that is laughable.
I do, too.
It's absolutely Orwellian, and it's amazing. Because if you're awake, you can sit back and see it. That's one of the things I often say. Yeah, let's show the establishment. Let's shake the establishment by all running out the vote for a Republican. Like it's funny. It's like it makes no sense at all. What would shake the establishment is if we all ran out and voted for the Green Party. Not saying that, right, you know, that I even believe that the election system. Me myself, I'm an anarchist personally, so I don't think I don't believe in any rulers. I don't think anybody has a right to sit down and make laws for me, whether they put on a suit or tie, or they put on a badge and carry a gun.
Right.
Like pretty much, if I'm not causing someone some kind of loss on their end, if I'm not damaging or I'm not stealing or I'm not hurting somebody, there is nothing that any man can sit down and write down on paper to control me or affect me. So I'm against that anyways. But I look at this voting system, and once I get past the fact that all the diabolical machines are all rigged and they control it, and they already know who's going to be the president, and they decided that, whether it was at Bohemian Grove or they decided it at the last Bilderberg meeting in some fancy hotel that I didn't even know existed originally, because I could never afford a room there. Yeah, exactly. The Council for National Policy. Yeah, I mean, that's what all these guys are kind of working for. You see a lot of them Council for National Policy guys.
I mean, they won't mention that on the alternative media. Yeah. They won't mention that. They won't touch it. Matter of fact, if you try and mention it, you know what's going to happen. You're going to get hung up on, and your call's going to get erased from the log, and nobody's going to hear it on the replay.
That's it, too. Like, it's okay to talk about the CFR. The Council on Foreign Relations, oh, yeah, you know, the CFR is doing this, and the CFR is
Bilderberg. The Bilderberg. It's like chasing ghosts, man.
And then the second you say, well, what about the Council for National Policy that's deciding domestic stuff that directly affects, hit the dump button. This guy's talking about the CMP, dump him, pow. Don't let him know that most of the people who come on some of these shows are actually members of the CMP.
Well, most of the time, a lot of the callers are actually the producers calling in trying to change the direction of the show.
Let me give you a few names in the mainstream media. Paul Craig Roberts, Stanley Monteith, Pat Buchanan, as well as, you know, and in the same group, we have Rothschilds, we have the Coors family, who was a big part of starting that group. You know, and we have people like Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson. You know, and these people are mixing together with your, you know, Paul Craig Roberts writes for InfoWars. You know, these people are Stanley Monteith, the other one, been on the Jones Show many times. You know, these people are you know, like you said, it's wolves in sheep's clothing. And they're pretending to guide people, and in reality, you know, they're pushing the same old doctrines. Hey, Paul Craig Roberts was actually Reagan's financial advisor, if that tells you anything about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's some of the things that amaze me, too, in this media. It's like, we all know that Reagan was pretty much, he was like Bush's mask. Like, Bush was president for 12 right. years, from like 1980 to 1992, but nobody liked to see George Bush on TV talking. But Ronald Reagan was an actor. So Ronald right. Reagan was real good at reciting lines, and exactly. people liked him. They could listen to him talk. But like, they'll go, oh, like, this guy is suddenly credible because he's a former Reagan administration guy. Or this guy's credible because he used to be with the Bush administration. It's like, I remember Karl Rove came out and endorsed Rand Paul. If you remember that, when Rand Paul was running for the Senate down right. there. He was endorsed by Karl Rove, and I actually saw people saying, Karl Rove knows that the New World Order isn't going to win, and he's changing sides. And I was trying to tell, it was so, like, mind-boggling. It's like, don't you realize that if you're cheering for the same guy Karl Rove is cheering for, you're on the wrong team.
Exactly.
You got tricked. You got played out. It's not that Karl Rove woke up and went, oh, my God, forget about this New World Order. It's never going to work. I better join the Patriot Movement. No, it's the guy that people thought was a patriot leader was actually with the New World Order. It's more like it.
Exactly. You know, and there's another one, too, and let's get back to Ron Paul for a second. His biggest donations have come from a Bilderberg member, Peter Thiel. You know, so, I mean, if that's not hypocrisy, if Jones isn't the worst journalist in the world for not, you know, exposing that, you know, along with the PNOC document that Don talked about, it's disgusting.
And then on top of that, you got, who's his campaign manager? It's Bruce Fein. His legal advisor is Bruce Fein.
Right.
Who's a hardcore Zionist, who's an Israeli firster. And his campaign manager is a guy named, what is it, Doug Wade or whatever. He's a Bush family insider running this campaign for Ron Paul.
Right. Like,
if someone came to me and said, you need to support a guy who, a Bush guy is running his campaign, he's got a Zionist attorney, the Bilderberger is funding him, and he wrote a book with PNAC, dude, I would say, what?
Yep.
Are you kidding me?
And you could throw out a couple of the things that came out in his name, too, you know? I don't care how much they want to deny that. That's some ignorant crap, man.
And here's another thing. Bruce Fein's, some of his clients include the IMF, the World Bank, Saudi Arabia, you know, there's Goldman Sachs. You know, are you kidding me? And his other client is Ron Paul?
Yeah.
All right. I can't. It's laughable. It really is. It's totally laughable.
No, it is laughable. And you know what it is, too, guys, is they've just come out with a really clever marketing campaign this time. I mean, look what they've done. Instead of the same old stuff that they do every campaign, they made it look like, with the help of the alternative media, that this guy wasn't getting the proper coverage and everybody's out to get him and everybody's against him. And all it is it's just part of getting all the people in the truth movement, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, all those people to buy back into the election. And it's working like a charm. Now that you've seen this trick, okay, you know, so let's say there was a group of 1,000 people that I knew, that's a really high number. Let's just say I knew 1,000 people that were awake. Now, after seeing all this Ron Paul stuff and watching the smoke clear, those 1,000 people, that list is down to about maybe 20 people. I mean, there's so many people that they think they're awake, and they're just really, like you said, they're just following another shepherd. I mean, really, that's what they're doing.
That's so true. It's like you said, they just put them back to sleep. Like, it's a big script. It's a big script. That's what I learned. That's what I learned when I don't know if you guys or your listeners are aware, but like, what woke me up was I started going to Shanksville years ago, and I started meeting eyewitnesses and talking to people out there, because after seeing documentaries and reading stuff on the net, it was like I was going to go out, because it's just 2 hours from my house, and find people, and that's how I was going to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. And as I met more people, I learned that everything I knew about Shanksville, from the official story all the way down to the alternative media story that was shot down out of the sky, that every single part of that
was all a lie. The whole thing was total fraud. It was all made up. Yeah. It was all scripted, all Hollywood. I mean, it was
all of it. And that's the same thing this Ron Paul thing is it's all scripted to make people go
right.
get mad, like, oh, CNN and Fox aren't giving him enough time on the stage. It's like, if he was a threat, they wouldn't have put him on the stage.
Exactly.
People talk about how the mainstream media ignores him, but then they sit there and they post clip after clip of him talking on Fox and talking on MSNBC and talking on CNN.
It's yeah.
Like, who's ignoring him? Who is ignoring him?
John Stewart, Bill Maher talks nice about him. Well, Colbert.
You know how you said they wouldn't have him on there if he wasn't, you know, if they didn't control his message? You, not only would you not be on the GOP debates, you don't get on television, period.
No. No, that's why every time they have a conspiracy theory question, they bring Alex Jones on Fox News.
Yeah, exactly, to stomp all over it. Or they take a show like Jesse's and they actually title it Conspiracy Theory. Instead of saying, hey, this is stuff that might really be going on, they title it Conspiracy Theory. So right away, you associate it with that, you know?
And that was somebody else who, for a while there, I was like, because I know people who had talked to Ventura. I'll say this. I've been on the fence about Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
His son's the real deal.
Uh-huh.
His son knows what's going on. His son is awake. But I think Jesse gets caught up in a lot of the crap.
Yeah, but he's an actor, too.
When he went on TV and he called his show Entertainment, that's when I went, okay, I know everything I need to know about him now.
Well,
because it's not entertainment.
Here was another thing too about him was when somebody after it was the first thing he was doing a Q&A on TrueTV.com, and somebody asked him about the New World Order, and he said, well, and I've never, to tell you the truth, I don't see that happening. You know, until that's in place, I don't even want to talk about it. Type answer. It's like, what do you mean? There's no agenda for a new, you know.
I'll tell you one thing. I don't consider him a very good researcher. I mean, at all. I mean, he doesn't really seem like he researches much. Like, except for he reads a lot of books about old stuff. But as far as current stuff, I mean, he even admits he's never at the computer.
Yeah. He catches up on, like, when I listen to him talk, at times it sounds like somebody who just stumbled onto this stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
And has some knowledge, but hasn't really gone down the rabbit hole. And a lot of the stuff he fires off are almost like talking points of the alternative media or whatever you want to.
He's regurgitating the Jones talk.
But yeah, same stuff. But then I watched his show, and I think it's done. I don't think they're taking up a second season.
Third,
is it? Did they air
it? It would be the third, yeah. They had two seasons, yeah.
Okay. The last time that I was, it was the second season when they had Rob from Pilots for 9/11 Truth on. And Rob had told him that, or told me that he had given him my contact info, and if they were going to do another season, he was going to contact me about Shanksville. But that never happened. But, oh, God, I forgot where I was even going with that. Sorry about that.
Oh. No, Dom. You talked to the coroner and everything in Shanksville that reported that there was, you know, absolutely no bodies and everything else, and that, you know.
That was. I'll tell you what. When I sat down with that guy, I was first off going there was one of the. I was like, man, if I ain't on no list before today, when I walk into the coroner's office, I'm definitely on the list. Like something, you know.
Justin told me he thought I was gonna get whacked.
I went there, and at the time, this was 2008. At the time, I bought into, you know, that the military had shot down Flight 93 because I had a lot of information that I couldn't piece together. But I'll tell you guys what, I sat in that coroner's office, and there was a video up on YouTube. Anyone can go watch. It's called Wally Miller and Human Remains. I went through a shoebox of photographs from the crash site. And from the DeMort lab that they set up afterwards, I went in there believing that a plane crashed, that a plane had shot down or been shot down, and they recovered human remains. When I went through the guy's photographs, there was a part of a severed left arm. There was two internal organs, and the rest were bone tips. And then the guy explained to me how the FBI would bring him in, you know, toothbrushes and combs and this and that. And the FBI was covering these because they couldn't find no body parts at the scene on September 11th. September 12th, they found this half an arm, but no one could find it on September 11th. And let me tell you, it was out in plain view. I tried to get it on camera. He wouldn't let me. He said anybody can get a copy, though, because he's an elected official. So you can – file a FOIA request, and you can actually obtain copies of the images, but there's really nothing but crash scene images, which you walk away saying, you know, there's no plane. But then he told me about how they brought in the remains, and I asked him right there, I said, you were quoted in the BBC as saying you never found a drop of blood at this crash site. And he's like, well, yeah, that's true. I found human remains, but I didn't find no blood. And meanwhile, I'm holding a photograph of an arm severed right around the forearm in the dirt. It's laying in dirt, and it's not burnt to a crisp. There's like, I mean, it's the real deal. It's definitely, it's not a fake body part. There's veins hanging out of it. It was very graphic. But I'm like, how can you not have any blood in the dirt? Like, wasn't there blood in this arm when it hit the ground? It's not burnt to a crisp. It didn't get cooked. Like, how can there not be blood?
It sounds like they took an arm and just dumped it. You know, they just took one and said, here, you know, the local coroner's a wahoo, so just, you know, give him a couple things so
just
he
like
can.
Like they dumped that engine on the sidewalk. Same deal.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I walked out of there saying. I'm like, there's no way that's even possible, especially with them internal organs I saw. It's like if someone's organ, I can't identify if it was a lung or a kidney or a heart, you know, but I mean, it kind of had that kind of color and shape to it. And I was like, how can like someone's internal organ rip through their body, land in the ground, and be blood free?
Yeah,
can't find blood.
That means that that body had been long dead, and they just took it off a cadaver. You know, that's what that means. It's just a movie. What do you call it at that point? Now, I mean, it's still someone's arm, but now it's just a prop.
yeah, absolutely. Like it was brought there afterwards, especially because none of that was found on September 11th. None of it, right. and like half an arm is hard to miss. When they have people going through the woods out there, they was looking for, you know, a plane. Everyone's like, where's the plane? We can't find the plane. No one believed that it disappeared in a hole that was 8 feet deep.
Oh, everything vaporized. Star Trek. You know what I mean?
Swallowed out. The ground
the swallowed people, the planes, everything. The buildings. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable, man.
And the drainage ditch had been there since, what, 1994 at least?
I saw that.
So
the pitches of the hole.
Those there. They those drainage ditches that you saw, that scar from 94 runs it runs the opposite way that the wings do in the 2001. Like 2001, the wings, the ditch runs like east to west, and that scar from 94 runs north to south. But I talked to Wally Miller about like the drainage ditches up there, and he talks about how much, you know, it backs up and they still have to put these drainage ditches in. And what's amazing is where they have a little parking area over by the Flight 93 Memorial now, right behind where all the cars park, there's like a 40-foot drainage ditch. There's one of them dug there.
Wow.
Same thing. So they're still having that problem. They're still putting drainage ditches like that up there to collect this water. I mean, yeah. And you know, the first witness I talked to was Susan McElwain. And anybody can go check that out on YouTube. She saw this little white, like, drone plane, which, I mean, I bet you what Susan McElwain saw is the same thing what everybody in Pakistan is seeing right now. Pretty much, she described on film a Predator drone. She never saw no commercial airline. She watched this Predator drone disappear behind this tree line. She saw an explosion. After I talked to people who were on the other side of the tree line, they heard an explosion. They went outside, and they described to me a little Predator drone flying around in circles, watching smoke rise up, you know, underneath of it, coming up over the trees, and then they watched this thing fly away. Now, a lot of people who saw what looked like a commercial airliner, none of them that I spoke with ever saw that plane upside down, ever. None of them. Like, people who were, like, a couple hundred feet from the crash site said it was flying right side up. Guy's name was Paul Miro. He lives less than 200 yards away. He's like, I saw it. He goes, it was flying level. It was flying right side up. He's like, and I just watched it fly. It disappeared behind the trees. He's like, I don't know. Maybe a minute later, I heard an explosion. And I'm like, but didn't it seem like it took a while for the explosion? He's like, well, I thought it took a while. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, a plane crashed, and a lot of people don't question it, you know what I mean? But no one ever saw this, and on the other side of this field, there's this little place called Indian Lake, and I talked to five or six people. I mean, if you've seen Loose Change, which one was it? I think
Final Cut. Saw Indian Lake. It was in the American Coup one, right?
Yes, yeah, that one. They talked to Barry Lichty. He was the he passed away. He was the mayor of Indian Lake, and he talked about how he heard. He said it sounded like a missile that flew over his house. It was coming from the direction of the crash site, and he heard that before the explosion, and before anything else happened. Any of the like the ground shook and the lights flickered and all that stuff, and then. I talked to a couple of people who were working over at Indian Lake Marina, like John Flegel, Jim Brandt, Carol Belasco, and they're like, they all heard the plane fly overhead. And when you look at the official government story, Indian Lake is past crash site. It never could fly over Indian Lake. So all this commercial airliner there, the one reported seeing heading that way, just kept flying. And it flew away, and then this little drone, this little Predator plane came up, and it, I mean, I don't know if it shot a missile or what it did. That's speculation right there. I haven't found anybody who can tell me I saw the Predator plane do this. Yep. But I found four or five people who are like, I saw it head that way, and then there was an explosion, and I had people come out and say, you know, I heard the explosion, I came outside, I saw this little white plane flying around, and then it left. So I can't say it fired a hole or a missile into that ditch. But that's pretty much like I know a 757 didn't crash there. I went through the coroner's photos. I know there weren't no human remains. There's actually one part where I pulled out a picture of a skull, and I asked Wally Miller. I said, "Now, is this a human skull? Did you recover this from the crash site?" And Wally Miller gets upset and says, "No, we didn't recover nothing like that. Don't go around on the internet telling people that we found heads and stuff at the crash site." He was like offended.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow. If a plane crashed, I would expect, with people on it, I would expect to find things like severed heads.
Mm-hmm.
Like my best friend's father-in-law worked, he was chief of police, and he worked the crash site in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. In 1994, we had a plane fall out of the sky. Mm-hmm. 757 commercial airliner fell down out of the sky, and he worked that scene, and him and a lot of his buddies ended up having to spend a year in therapy, even though they were cops. Because they had never seen anything like that. They had never worked, you know, with that
right,
kind
probably
of...
Probably dead quarters. Kids and everything else. Charred remains, and, right.
And one of the things I asked him was, what did you, you know, because before I went to Wally Miller, I went and talked to him, and he was like, well, you know, we gridded the scene. He's like, we made these squares. He's like, we put, you know, stakes in the ground. We took string. He's like, and we made a grid, and we photographed everything before we removed it. We documented it. I went to Wally Miller, and the first thing I asked him, I said, did you grid the scene? And he was like, I wanted to do that, but the FBI said no. The FBI said there wasn't manpower to do something like that. And I'm like, what?
I think they wouldn't give the manpower on 9/11 when all this crap happened. Oh, no, we're not going to. You know, that's the first sign something's wrong, Dom, is when they're doing everything against the book, against procedure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I mean? And you would have had volunteers from all over that area, you know, people who are just normal paramedics mm-hmm. and firemen and cops. They would have volunteered to work that scene. But you know what? None of them who did work that scene ended up in therapy or anything because they don't find anything that resembled a crash site.
You should have thousands of people committing suicide since 9/11 because of all the tragedy that happened, you know?
Absolutely.
You don't.
Haven't witnessed
you don't
that
hear any
being
of those
traumatized.
Stories.
No. The only stories we hear of suicide is what? 20 veterans a day committing suicide. That's the only suicide.
Exactly.
Story.
We were just talking about that. I don't know if you were listening when we were talking about that.
Earlier in the show, yes. And you know
exactly.
why? Because those guys
more than
are
a dying
real carnage. Those guys
are
real carnage. That's why they're doing that.
Yeah, and they can't even handle it. Not to say that I could either. So if that exactly. And there's no you don't hear any of those stories over here.
Yeah, I don't know how many guys you know who've actually been in this war, but like I've known people who like right after 9/11 were like, oh, you know, they bought into it, they enlisted and whatnot, and I mean, dude, they sat down and they tell me stories, and like my one buddy who spent 4 years in Iraq, he was like, he goes, there's stuff you don't hear, like he goes, we had to kick kids off the trucks, man. The kids were jumping on the truck screaming, "I love America, take me, help me." And he goes, we had to kick him off. And he goes, and I go to bed at night. He goes, and I dream. And he goes, I dream that the kid jumping on the truck is my son. And I'm kicking him off. I ain't helping
right.
him.
Wow.
And this is the kind of stuff that these guys, my one buddy, he's been in Afghanistan, dude. He came back 4th of July. Listen, I don't know if you ever spent 4th of July with a veteran, but when them booms started going off, wow.
Oh, man.
I had no idea. I had no idea. Like, it showed me things that I never saw. And these are, I mean, they're tough dudes. I mean, you know, they come from bad neighborhoods. They've been through shit in their life.
Are they all easier to talk to now? Now that they came back, like, they see how you come about, the way you come about things?
Oh, dude, everybody I've seen that I talk to, it goes there, comes back awake.
Yeah, they have to, right?
Story
all of them, right? Everyone?
Mm-hmm. I think this is something I never really talked about. Buddy was in Iraq. They were all loading trucks. He told me the story, and he goes, we're taking these crates. He's like, and we're loading these crates up in these trucks. He's like, and everyone's kind of like whispering. It's like, what's going on here? And they're like, you know, what's in these? And they're like, what? They're like disposable, single-fire rocket, rocket launchers. He's like, you fire them once and drop them. They're like, bullshit, we don't use these. And they're loading them up in the truck. And one of the dudes is like, that's it, I had enough. He busts the thing open. And that's what they're loading. And he's like, who are we selling these to? We're loading up trucks with these disposable single-fire rocket launchers. And these crates are a truck, you know, these trucks full of crates are driving away. And what? A week later, people were shooting these fucking things at us and dropping them and running.
It must be pretty crazy talking to some of your buddies that went over there and like, did most of them before they went, were they not awake, most of them, and now they've come back were like, are they like, wow, Dom, I mean, everything you said is right, and I wish I never enlisted. They all regret enlisting,
absolutely.
I'm sure, right?
Absolutely. My buddy in Afghanistan says they call heroin over there Bin Laden weed. They call
wow.
Yeah, that's what we protect. We protect Bin Laden weed.
Wow.
Huh.
So I thought we was going over there to fight terrorists and hunt Bin Laden. He's like, man, I'm over there protecting opium fields. He's like, we're paying the Taliban money. It's like, I don't get it.
Because it's all about the drug dealing on a big scale, man.
I mean, that
among other things. But, I mean, Jesus, I mean, it's really not – it's really – you don't have to really dig too – to see what's going on with that. I mean, come on, the production of opium has gone up like tenfold since we've been there. All right, and then if you look at the problem in this country with the OxyContin and the Percocet and everything that comes from opiate, the last 10 years in this country has been through the roof. You don't think that's that's not a coincidence?
No,
that's direct. You know,
it's not a
direct.
Just like cocaine boomed in the 80s when we were down dealing with Colombia and there's no such thing as a coincidence anymore.
Well, what happens when
there
as far as being around the drugs?
Drugs that kids are dying by. It's not.
I think I lost Justin. Dom, you still there?
Population, dumb and not caring about any of these issues.
Yeah. Dom, are you still there? He's calling back in. Hold on. Hello, is this Dom?
Yeah, hey, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know. I got disconnected for a second too. It seemed like. Justin, what was the last thing you were saying? We got cut off for a second.
No, I was. What was I just talking about? Wow.
You know what? Why don't we? We're gonna take a quick break, guys. And Dom, you got a few more minutes? Can you stay with us a little longer, or?
Oh yeah, I'll hang out a few more.
All right, cool. We're gonna play a quick song, and we're gonna come right back after the break. I just gotta dig it up. Go ahead, guys. Talk for another like minute or two. I thought I had it queued up.
All right. Good.
The exact opposite. Real quick before we get into this, the exact opposite of the people I know who come back awake. Of course, it would be the people who come back complete sociopaths and get into organizations like
right.
Z, who have Blackwater and whatnot, who have no mm-hmm. remorse and no conscience. And I mean, you know, that'll happen to you, I guess. If you kill enough people, I guess, you know, parts of your brain will shut off like that, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. I have buddies that have gone over there. You know, they go over there just for the bonuses, and that's what it comes down to. They go over there for the bonuses. They come back, they buy a car, they blow all the money up their nose or drugs, you know, or whatever, and then they go back over there because they're broke.
Yeah, that's a lot of people I know who joined was like they had no job.
Guys, we'll be right back. We're gonna take a quick break. You're listening to Real News Radio. Okay, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us during that brief break. You're listening to Real News Radio with Brian Stavely and Justin Cook. We're joined tonight by our special guest, Don DiMaggio. And we're pretty much just talking about everything. I mean, we started off talking a little bit about, you know, the election and Ron Paul. And, well, that's what we started when Dom called in. We talked about Iran earlier. You know, we're always talking about the wars, about terrorism. I think later in the show today, I actually want to get into a little bit about GMO food and organic food and some of the misrepresentation that's going on, how you really got to be careful. And you're hearing some stories come out like arsenic in the apple juice and all this stuff that you're hearing lately, organic baby formula with the brown rice sugar. You know, we're going to get into that a little bit later. But guys, are you both with me here, Dom and Justin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. I don't remember where we left off. If you guys, what direction you want to head from here? What were we talking about last there?
Well, real quick, can I ask if you guys think is voting still a viable option?
Voting?
Yeah.
Here's my deal. I think no, not at all. I don't think it. I don't think it matters at all. But I do think that if people are going to tell you that they're going to go vote, I'm not going to talk them out of it because there's not really any harm in it. And if it's going to help them and somehow get more educated about maybe what some of these people believe in for real, even though it's probably not going to work, then I'm all for that. So I'm not going to talk people out of it. But myself, no, I don't believe in it. On a local level, I do, maybe.
Yep.
But, you know, like your city council, stuff like that, you know. But not on a federal level, no. What do you think?
I personally think the same thing. My whole opinion is the reason that I don't vote is I don't want to consent by voting. I feel I'm consenting to the war crimes and to everything else. And not only that, but there's really nobody out there I wanted to vote for. Recently, Bill Still has announced he's going to run. If you guys know about Bill Still, he's the real deal when it comes to money. He made Secrets of Oz. He made the Money Masters. He's running on the Libertarian ticket. And, of course, Roseanne Barr said she was going to run. I would almost vote for them at a protest, but I really don't think I'm going to vote because, you know, again, I think it's just consenting to this tyrannical system, in my opinion.
That's kind of my same belief. I think if people are going to go out to vote, I would advise them, like I kind of been advising, you know, if you're going to support one of these people, support Roseanne or like you said, Bill there, somebody from one of those other parties. I mean, maybe I believe there's enough of us. I really do. But, you know, the machines are against us. We don't have pen and paper. There's really no accountability. So it is kind of more like just a dog and pony show.
It is.
But I mean, if it was legit, for as many of us as there are and the way they're trying to manipulate and control us through Ron Paul. And that's something else I think Ron Paul does is it gives them an idea of how big our movement really is, how big, you know,
right,
this revolution to an extent. And then they know, hey, listen, if I know X amount of people are supporting him, then I know they're awake. And I know that there's probably at least another, you know, one or two times that many who are awake that aren't supporting them. And it enables them to get an idea of how much of the population. Was it Brzezinski who talked about, you know, like the mass, I think the direct quote was something along the lines of a mass political awakening in the world that was really truly scaring the behind the strings, the puppet masters. But yeah, it's like I don't know how else to get out of the system. You know, other than to take yourself out, just like the way you live your life every day, where that's how I am. It's like, I don't let their rules or their laws or whatever get
their
me.
Policies. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, you know, and that's the main thing. I think, like, you know, like you said, these aren't even laws. They're just policies, and we're under, you know, maritime admiralty law anyway, and it's just the cops are nothing but clowns in costumes. You know, that's what it is. And once you understand that they don't really have any you know, they don't have any more say over you than the other, you know, than the other guy on the block. You can film them as you want. You can talk to them like you talk to anyone else on the street. And that's how it should be. And that's the thing is just don't recognize their authority. You know, I mean, obviously in certain situations, you don't want to get yourself shot or whatever, you know, but I think, you know, that's the main thing of getting out of the system is just to, you know, as many things as possible, whether, you know, you get into growing your own food, prepping, you know, just totally trying to get off the grid. A lot of that is really impossible nowadays. It's really hard to do. But I think, you know, the things that we can change, you know, those are things we need to work on. One thing I wanted to add, too, was I think when it comes to the whole thing about voting and the whole thing about the whole system, I think that during the past couple of years, we've also seen, I think, a purpose, psyop where the mainstream media is actually discrediting themselves on purpose to drive people towards us because they know it's a controlled movement. And I think Occupy Wall Street was another example of this. And, you know, the fact of these police beating people and macing people right out in the open. I think that was a direct thing to kind of say, you know, wake up a little bit, but you're going to wake up into one of our boxes. Either you're going to wake up to Michael Moore and, you know, this socialist whatever side or whatever, or you're going to wake up into Ron Paul and Alex Jones and these guys. And either way, you're still in a controlled box. You know, you're still not, you know, your own person. And that's the main thing they do, you know, control the opposition. That's one of the oldest things in the book, divide and conquer. And that's what they do well. You know, think of this on election day. What if we all, everyone that rejected the system, what if we all went and organized somewhere and sat and say like, Zuccotti Park, you know, wherever the Occupy, you know, the Occupy movement was co-opted, it was fake from the start. But what if we all just went in opposition, showed up across the street from the polls and said, hey, we're not voting for anyone. You know, we're not going to take it anymore. We our vote is no confidence. I think that, you know, if we can really do that, get the pressure, but no, it's not going to happen because people are showing up to vote for Republicans and, you know, this puppet and the other puppet. And so, I mean, you know, I don't see that happening anytime soon. And I think that's what they want to do, keep you engaged in their system and keep you with the false hope that your guy is going to get in or, you know, I think they are going to put him in. But, you know, it's just a basic thing. Like I said, by this summer, I see the mainstream media really starting to endorse Ron Paul, because here's the thing, like I called from the beginning, the GOP, you know, as we've gone along, we've seen a new front runner every 2 weeks, and that's what they've done. And so, you know, pretty soon it's going to be Ronnie's turn, and that's all it comes down to. And eventually, just like Obama, you know, in 2008, everyone thought Hillary was going to be president. Well, switch that, and now think of Hillary as Romney and think of Obama as Paul. You know, same thing, except for, you know, Obama was the guy with really no experience, but they thought, hey, he's idealistic. Well, this is the old guy with all the experience. Now we're going the opposite direction. And this guy always votes constitutional, you know, even though he's a few of the things he's voted for were just, you know, voting against Glass-Steagall is just a slap in the face to anybody out there that, you know, understands anything to do with the economic system. But his followers just think that, you know, the less regulations on the banks, the better. My opinion on that is I think that the banks and the authorities need to be regulated. The people don't, you know, and that's the main thing. You know, the personal liberties, yeah.
Can I jump in with something real quick?
Yeah.
Wow, why am I hearing an echo? Oh, did you hear an echo?
No, you're good.
All right, I'm hearing one. I don't know what happened. I went outside and everything went haywire. Here's the thing, you know, you need to reform things.
This guy wants to basically, you know, shut down every agency that regulates anything. I mean, you can't do that, you know?
Well, right. You're totally right. You have these agencies out there. You know, as bad as they are, we still need to have them. We just need to throw everybody out that's in them. You know, you don't want to get rid of the FDA. You just want to clean it up and get rid of the Monsanto trash and the big pharma trash from out of it. You know, and that's the thing. You got to get rid of the lobbyists. You know, but you don't want corporations having free reign. You know, this Ayn Randian idea to where, you know, the corporations come first and, you know, and the little guy, you know, it you know, the thing of do we have do we have to account for other people? And I think we do. I think we have.
Yeah, we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, you guys, it's Jamie. How you doing tonight?
Jamie, how are you?
Doing really good. Hey, you guys are touching on some really good points here, and I really wanted to interject. Justin, you had kind of touched base on the answer to the political problem that off-grid is impossible as a solution. But if you guys think about it, if we can no longer vote, our system is so broken, we can no longer vote, because to be honest with you, I am with Justin. There is no one out there that's worthy of my vote. I feel that if I'm giving my endorsement and my vote, I'm actually saying that I back that person, and I believe in where they want to take our country. I don't agree with it. Anybody wants. It's all nothing but hidden agendas, you know. And what I've realized is that for myself personally, until I stop going shopping at Walmart every day, and I stop eating their food, and I stop buying all their electronics, and I stop going to the movies, and I stop doing all of these things, well, guess what happens? I'm no longer complying with that system. I'm basically saying, I no longer agree. And if everybody took that own social responsibility about themselves, we actually could start to solve this problem, because fighting about all the politics, we're just putting another wolf in there to slit our throats. That's all we've done. We get nailed every time. I was a blind voter. I went every year. I watched everybody. I drank the Kool-Aid. And you know what? Bill Clinton, I supported him. I drank his Kool-Aid. I didn't care how much he slick-willied anybody, you know, because I thought he was doing right by my country. And when I learned what happened when that man was in office, I lost it. I lost it. Because you know what? I wasn't being represented. And we were just getting thrown more comforts. We were, oh, here, life is good in the 90s. You're going to make great money, and everything's going to boom, and life is going to be fabulous, and we're going to give you everything you want on a consumeristic level, so you blindly keep us giving you what we want you to have, keeping us compliant, keeping us in the system.
Right.
Personally, I don't know if you guys have followed, because I know that we're friends on Facebook, but I am going off-grid. I'm walking
away.
I'm done. It's not impossible. And you know what? Everybody, everywhere in the world and all over America, take all your money, get solar panels, grow your own food, put up a fence, help your neighbors. Do off-grid in your own home. You don't have to go off in the middle of the desert. You own your property. Yeah, we know the government can come and take it. But until they do, if we band together, what can they do?
Right.
If people start thinking about this on we're just spreading the problem. Let's talk about a solution. Like, seriously, it's the only way to think about it. Because do you guys want to vote another one of them jackasses in? I'm sorry to put it that way, but
No, they don't represent me. You know, Mitt Romney with what he bet $10,000, you know, that's a slap in the face to Americans right there. You know, just saying that I make all this money and the way they come across, they're so smug and arrogant. And, you know, and like you said, we know their agendas. We've seen the things that these people support. And the ones that, you know, that have voted decently or whatever, we still see they have agendas too. So, you know, the best idea is to opt out. You know, if you can not pay taxes, great, do it. You know, it may be hard to do. You may get Ellen and Ed Brown, but I think if you're a low key person, you know, you might have a better chance at it than someone like them. But you know, that's the main thing, is I think that we have to start finding ways out of it. And like you said, stop shopping at Walmart. You know, go to your local neighborhood. farm, stop going to factory farms, all this other stuff. These are the solutions, guys. You know, until we get a critical mass of people that are willing to do this stuff, you know, we're going to have to, we're going to keep seeing the same thing. You know, great points, Jamie.
Well, exactly. You know, and you guys, that's, I mean, that's why we've started a website. And we're documenting what we're doing because we want people to see it's possible. You know, until people really get a grasp on the idea that it's obtainable, they're like, ah, that's a pipe dream. We're not inventing anything new. There's tribal organizations that still live simplistically off the land and thrive. Are they affected what's going on? Look at the Amish. I'm not religiously agreeable with their views, but their lifestyle's amazing.
Yep.
They have a sense of community. They eat great food. Yep. They take care of each other.
And do you see how bad the Amish are being targeted now by the federal government?
Yep. Absolutely.
They're being raided with M16s.
You look, they're being shut down. Ridiculous things like selling healthy raw milk.
Yeah, yeah. For raw milk or what was the other thing too was something else. You know, they're showing up in Amish communities with AK-47s. You know, like it's a dangerous cult. These people just want to be left alone. That's it. You know, and
exactly.
I was thinking that the other day. I wish that they would just give all the liberty, free-minded people like us, one state out of the union, and we could go there and just be left alone. You know, and let us go and set up Tesla free energy and, you know, let us go and set up our own internet, you know, whatever, and leave us alone. But it'll never happen, of course. But, you know, that should be an option. You know, that if I would love it. Like I said, it'll never happen. Give us an Indian reservation type thing. Everyone
hey,
that wants to go there free, do it. Go ahead.
We can make it happen. Enough of us get together. I mean, Brian, I know you've been doing this for a long time, you know, and I know I've watched your progress, you know, as we've grown as friends, and you know, you and I at least know on that level of things that we do see eye to eye, and you and I have had a lot of political growth together, you know, and the only way that I could ever see of doing it is get us all to do it. If we all do, can they shoot us all? No. Can they take us all to jail? No. But if we don't pay our taxes, yeah, they're going to give us a bunch of hell. But if we're growing our own food, supplying our own electricity, pumping our own water, and taking care of each other on a communal level, that what can they do? They can't come in and just kill everybody. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You know, and we give them too much credit thinking that they can just stomp us down because it is the five monkey theory. You know, it's the way it was when we got here. Well, you know, we can't change it. It's always been that way. You know, and it's not that way. We can change it and we can grow past this. And you know, you guys are agreeable with what I'm saying, but at the same time, you don't think it's possible. Start believing it's possible. Start encouraging it. I mean, people are listening to you guys. Use that to your advantage because you guys are telling the truth and you guys are exposing a lot of things that are going on in the world that need it. And you know what? Run with it. Encourage people to do whatever they can to not be compliant anymore.
I agree with you. You know, and there's one thing I've been actually looking into was the New Hampshire Free State Project and things like that to where, you know, agorism and, you know, living like that is being encouraged more. And there's more people that are willing to use like Bitcoin and stuff like that for currency. You know, people that are willing to hire you and, you know, under the books. And you know, that's what it needs to be, you know, because to have a community, you have to have people with all types of skills. You know, you have to have somebody to do, you know, drill wells and build things. And,
it can work.
Absolutely.
But you have seen a lot more communities trying to have their own currency now and things like that, you know. It can work, you know. It absolutely can. That's the way things need to be, because that's really ultimately – Jamie, that's the only way it will work.
I agree.
The system we're under now is never going to work. No matter what we do to patch it up, you have to get rid of it.
Have you guys seen the thing floating around? You know, sometimes you just have to walk away and start over.
Yep.
Maybe it's one of those scenarios because, you know, us sitting here fighting about it all the time, we're not getting anywhere. I think we're actually giving them what they want. because we're sitting here. We're not doing anything. We're staying stagnant because, yeah, we feel like we're doing something because we're talking, but we're really not because we're still sitting our butts in our chairs and we haven't done anything about it, you know? And if we're the people that see things this way, then we need to lead by example, you know? And we need to show people that, you know, you can live your life freely and you don't have to be dependent on the government and you don't have to vote some moron into office because you feel it's the lesser of two evils. That idea just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and I don't want to be a lamb being led to slaughter anymore. You know, I want to actually live a life that's valuable. I don't know. Thank you, guys.
Dom, what do you think about all this?
I absolutely agree. The kind of phrase, we need to become unincorporated. I didn't know what that meant at first. When I live here, for those who don't know that are listening, I live pretty much in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I have some friends down in West Virginia. When the first time I went driving through West Virginia, I'd pass through these little towns and I'd see this sign. It'd be like, you know, village of whatever, unincorporated. Unincorporated. And I was like, why is this not incorporated? What does that mean? And I began looking. And the main problem is a lot of people, and this is why, you know, voting doesn't really resolve anything. A lot of people realize that the United States of America is not a democratic republic. It's nothing like that. Since 1871, it's been a corporation owned by the Rothschilds banking family because the federal government has gotten so far into debt that the only way they could pretty much, you know, get money from the Bank of England was to sell us all out, sell out everything, sell out humans as, you know, livestock, pretty much. They're going to produce money for you. They trade away our land and our resources. No, we're not going to drill this oil because this is an asset that we're going to use as collateral to borrow money. That's why we're buying, you know, oil from all the way across the world when we have it right here, is because that oil isn't really ours. It's an asset that we use as collateral to phony money to get from a banking family in England. And it's one big corporation. So as long as we're a part of the corporation, and anybody who works for a giant corporation will know this. I got hired by one 12 years ago because they was like, well, it's money, and they're going to give me health insurance, and that's stuff that I need. And I had no idea what I was signing up for. But as years go on, you will learn that the corporation will screw you, doesn't care about you, but expects you to put the corporation first in your life. And that's what we do. That's what we're taught. We're taught from the day we get put into this government-run daycare center that they call school, that here in Pennsylvania, I don't know about in your states, but here in Pennsylvania, they feed children fluoride tablets still. In 2012, they are still feeding kids fluoride in this public school system, and then they teach you the Pledge of Allegiance, and they feed you a bunch of crap so that by the time you come out, you're so gung-ho about America that no matter what America does, it's the right thing. You know, America is going to take your money and give it to banking families. Well, they need it. They need bailed out. If they go under, we're screwed. America's going to go invade this country. Well, that country is a threat to us, so we need to go kill all these people. And it's just, you know, a bunch of programming and propaganda to get us involved in the corporation. Getting off the grid, and I think maybe, not to speak on Justin's behalf, but I think when he said maybe it was impossible, has more to do with a financial situation where in today's economy, in today's job market, it's hard for people waking up right now to have the kind of money to, you know, go solar panel their house. And there are other things we could do. We could still do our own gardens and stuff. You can maybe, you know, start putting a little bit aside for these solar panels. You can get off the grid, to get unincorporated and act like the federal government doesn't exist and have zero effect on your life is ultimately the real goal. When people talk about, you know, oh, we're part of the freedom movement or liberty, that's what we want. It's like a lot of people don't realize what freedom is. They're afraid of real freedom. They don't necessarily want real freedom. That's when I talk about being an anarchist, and I say I don't want to have rulers. I don't mean I don't want to have rules.
Right.
I just don't want to have rulers, because rulers can change them. Like, we can go and vote for Bush, and we can go vote for Obama, we can go vote for Ron Paul, but if we can't vote for the ballots, and we can't vote for the wars, and we can't vote for this, and we can't, well, what good is it?
You're right.
What good is it? It makes you feel good. You got a little smile on your face.
It's
a
false sense of choice.
I marked a little piece of paper, and now my duty is done. It's like, no, your duty ain't done. You just got played.